Howdy, howdy, partners. You've moseyed on up to the Waxing Lyrically podcast, coming at you from the historic Lyric Theater located in beautiful downtown Brownwood, Texas. If you don't know where Brownwood is, my granny always said, if you pinch Texas on the belly, Brownwood would say, hoo-hoo. I'm Drex Holt, and I'm here with you. I'm here with you and also in person with Alisa Hinton.
Hey, Drex, that was phenomenal.
I was a little nervous. Can you hear my nerves?
Because
no. It was something new.
All okay. I heard was your granny's Pillsbury Doughboy. It's wonderful.
I'm trying to get a way to do that where it doesn't tickle my lips when I put them together. So it's not. That was better.
Yeah, that
Let's
was
Let's go
good.
Back and do it again. Like no, I'm sun. Kidding. I'm kidding. It's already there. All right. So basically today we're going to talk about the movie we had a red carpet premiere for, Showdown on the Brazos. Yeah. It's locally made, all local actors. It was just an outstanding movie. And we have two great interviews with the director, Bill Foster, and a separate interview with the director of photography, Josh Wilburn, where we talk about all kinds of cool things that have happened as far as local film here in Central Texas, but also really exciting things that are going to happen in the future with film in Texas.
I'm really looking forward to that.
I wonder if you can hear in the background, if you're listening to this, there are some great audition performances going on for The Music Man.
Yeah.
And I'm getting excited already.
Me
too.
They
sound amazing.
I want to go out there and watch, and then I'll be tempted to get up there and audition, and I don't want to audition. So.
Well, let's stay the course and go ahead and keep going with what we got going on.
All right. Well, before we get to our interviews, we want to plug the upcoming events. Mm-hmm. Saturday, April 20th at 7:30 p.m., we have a concert. It's jazz pianist Dennis Lambert. The tickets are $20 for adults, $10 for kids. It's sponsored by Kerbo's Office Systems. Dennis is a native to Brownwood.
Yeah, he's kind of a big deal. I think he lives in...
He lives in Tokyo.
Yes, he lives in Tokyo, and he comes back to visit and to get a couple of concerts, I guess, is how it went. Dylan knows him pretty well.
I talked to somebody yesterday who said they can't wait for the concert, and they have already seen him and said he is fantastic. So
we're getting a treat here.
We are.
We're at the Brownwood Lyric Theater.
It's such a small town to have such great talent, too. So, yeah, get your tickets and be sure and show up Saturday, April 20th at 7:30 for that. Then, in May, we've got Kristen Harris. And
she's a young country singer from Texas.
Multi-award-winning singer-songwriter, entertainer. So she is going to put on a concert here at the Lyric Saturday, May 11th at 7:30. So get your tickets for that as well. I think you had mentioned that she was a contender on American Idol.
Yes. And, you know, it'd be cool if we could interview her because I want to ask how it goes. Do they fly you out there? Do they set you up at a apartment?
Or, yeah.
You know, because I know that they say, oh, you're going to Hollywood, but I never knew the logistics.
Yeah.
Like maybe once the cameras stop rolling, but it's on you to get there.
Yeah. So it kind of reminds me of.
I'm reading here. She's a multi-award. Well, you saw that already, but she's known for her Western swing spin on original and classic songs of the Western and rural lifestyle.
Looking forward to that. Yeah. Well, shall we get to those interviews?
We should. We'll go ahead and introduce Bill Foster. The great Bill Foster had a ton of stories for us, and you're going to love this. And we are here with the great Bill Foster. Bill Foster, how's it going?
It's good, but thank you for the great, but I sure don't deserve that.
In my mind, you are.
Well, thank y'all and the Lyric for having me here today.
Absolutely.
Do you know Alisa?
Yes.
Excellent.
So Showdown on the Brazos.
Yes, ma'am.
It's going to be, we've got it scheduled for
Saturday, the 23rd, mm-hmm. and then at 7:30, and then Sunday at 2:30.
Wonderful. And it is a film. So we just wanted to sit down and kind of chat with you and just ask a few questions and let our audience know a little bit more about you. I know you know several. You've
if
been
they don't already
the
know, that's exactly. what I was going to say. Yeah. He's a well-known guy around here.
Yes, I've spent better on 30 years around the Brownwood area. So exciting to be back in Brownwood.
Well, that's a good segue because the question was, how did you come to find the lyric? Or did the lyric find you?
Well, I heard about it on the radio. They were going over the minutes of the meeting, talking about the meeting. And Dub Wilson was on there, and I contacted Dub. I said, how do I get to help the lyric? Because we were involved with one-act play in high school, and my wife and I were doing a contest. We were contest directors. In other words, one-act play, they'd put it on, but we ran the contest. You know, we got the judges. We made sure everybody's in order and all that kind
of
stuff.
All of it.
Right. So we and my son was a theater major in college, and so we were kind of – partial to the theater, and when I heard about the lyric on the radio, I said, I want to be a part of it, and then I got to be on the board for several years, and I only got off because I moved away.
The rest is history.
The
wow.
rest is history.
So you were in education. Is
yes,
that
ma'am.
What your...
I spent 33 years in education. I started out teaching, and then 15 years of being a principal, and 10 over in Goldthwaite, and then 11 years as superintendent, 2.5 in Rising Star, and 8 years in Bangs, Texas.
And then
my
after
deepest
that,
condolences.
You were thinking the first thing you wanted to do was go play a zombie, right?
Is that came along. Yeah.
It I don't know that story.
Yeah, he was on Fear the Walking Dead.
Yeah, two seasons.
Well, no, he was a regular guy at first, but I guess, as you said, it was customary. Once you've been killed off as a person, then you come back and play a zombie.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I was on, if you remember, on Fear the Walking Dead, the vultures that were trying to overthrow the good guys in the baseball stadium. Well, when you try to overthrow the good guys, you never win.
No,
and so we had a big gunfight, and they killed me, and I came back as a zombie.
Oh, so you were a villain.
Yes.
Oh, nice.
Yes,
that's
yes.
Awesome.
And they loved me because being tall with long arms, I could reach over the other zombies and reach in car windows or, you know, when you see their hands on the windows, I could reach up really high and bring it down.
So
that's awesome.
I didn't realize that how much acting experience you also. So you're a playwright.
Yes, ma'am.
You're an actor.
Yes, ma'am.
You're an educator.
Yes, ma'am.
What do you like the best?
Directing.
Directing.
Yes.
Oh, wow.
Okay. So talk about directing. What? How does it differ from being on the other side?
I always said being an actor is a part of the picture, and being a director, you paint the whole portrait. And so you tell all the story. Each character is part of the story. You bring them all together to tell the full story. You know, I've won a Director of the Month in Milan, Italy. Several directing awards in Arizona.
Shout out to Arizona. That's
where
I'm from.
And I can't remember where else, but I've received from Cannes a breakout first-time director award. So,
and that's awesome. See, the kind of person I am, I kind of like just being that one little brush.
Yes,
you know?
Me too.
I feel a lot better
that way. The one little piece of paint, and then you can take your brush and put us wherever.
You can yell at me as much as you want. That's fine. I'll do whatever you say.
Yeah, but I really do. I like both acting and directing, but directing is my love.
Your real passion.
I, you know, you have to try both of them somewhere along the way, and that way you figure out which one you like best, and by far the directing.
So talk about Showdown on the Brazos. Did you wrote,
yes.
directed, starred,
yes.
everything?
Produced.
It was a passion. It was a passion project, right?
And we're still working on it.
You kept working on it. That's what I'm saying. You want to get it right.
Right, exactly. And I don't know how the man found out my name, but it's some producer from Los Angeles called me. And we were talking, and he said, I just want to let you know you never finished the script. You just finally shoot the movie. And then I found out you never finished the movie. You just finally show it.
Yeah. I think I heard that too. Yeah. You never finish it. You just,
And it's been a trial and tribulation, but there's no quit in me and my team. And It's taken about 7 years to put it in front of people, but, you know, Josh Wilburn was our main cameraman, and his mother passed away mm-hmm. while we was filming. Right after that, my horse fell on me and broke my leg on set, and I had to have surgery, and so that knocked us out for a little while, and I kept acting mm-hmm. and running on my broke leg. That hurt a little bit. I broke it on Saturday, and then the following Wednesday, I had a plate and 13 screws put in it.
And then the next day he got right back up
right up that Saturday and Sunday too. And Monday I couldn't do it, but Saturday and Sunday I was acting and I go, and you'll see that tomorrow when I'm limping in the gunfight and we pretended I got shot in the leg later on, but it's
just
really
write it in. You're the playwright.
That's right.
You're
that's
the director.
Right.
You do what
I can
you
do
want.
What I want to. That's right.
I think if you break something back in those days, you're just going to limp.
Yeah.
You
know? Yeah. And then COVID came along and shut us down for about a year. Mm-hmm. And then I like 3 weekends finishing it up, and COVID lifted for all the movie making. I got 2 weekends done and COVID shut us down again. And so then that was about another 6 months, and finally got that last weekend in, and then post-production hit. And that's taken forever. So we're finally about there.
Well, I was going to ask you what the challenging part of Showdown was, but it sounds like there were multiple challenging pieces.
And that's with every movie made. There's always mm-hmm. challenges, and you have to overcome those challenges. If you look at, you know, everybody, my family couldn't believe I'd always watched the tail end of a VHS, you know, the behind mm-hmm. the scenes. Nearly every movie has something like that mm-hmm. either went wrong mm-hmm. or couldn't finish, and you know, one of our problems wasn't really a problem, but one of our main stars, she got sick and couldn't complete the movie. Well, we had the first and last of the movie with her in there, and so we couldn't film the middle part because she was sick she's on the hospice now. But I had to rewrite the where she was involved. I had to rewrite that, and so
character just took a whole new turn. Yeah. I mean, how do you have a character be in the beginning and the end but not in the middle? she went away to her aunt's for 9 months.
Yeah, well, we just not that. we did a lot of cutting and editing and remove her importance in the front and begin. She was a saloon owner mm-hmm. and she was going to be teetering between being a bad girl and a good girl, and so we had to take all that out and rewrite it. And if you're a fan of Stanley Kubrick, you know, like mm-hmm. The Shining,
definitely. Yes.
He was writing a lot of the script in the afternoon or late at night I saw one where they're all putting makeup on, he's got his typewriter, he's over there typing in new script. So they do it all the time.
But you get on set in the morning and director's like, well, I have 30 new pages that I need you to look at now.
we didn't have any of that, but I tried to be as organized as possible. And so, you know, and I tell this story a lot of times getting ready for it. My wife would ask me if I wanted to eat, and I'm in the bedroom on a computer, and I wouldn't know whether it's breakfast, lunch, or dinner, or supper.
Yeah.
I'd wake
She's
up.
She's like, you need nutrition.
Yes,
do you
I'd
want
wake
some?
Up now, my face down on the computer keyboard or in my chair or something.
But
like
see,
that.
That's something I really, really admire, is that you can just sit there and go. Because I like to think I have good ideas, but getting me to sit down and stay there and type. I mean, what must the inside of your brain be like if you've got all these stories and they're complete, they move fluidly, and they're just waiting to come out?
The story has to be fluid, or other mm-hmm. people aren't going to follow it on the screen or read it too. So you're right there. Mm-hmm. I've kind of been absent these last 2.5 years, so I had to go back and start finishing a lot of stories I had started. And that was tough. I'm like, where was my brain at that point?
Oh, yeah.
And then take off. And a lot of it, I don't know. You know, I may know the beginning and the end or something like that and have to get there.
But I'm very interested in that
in that process. So have you always been a storyteller or a writer? How did you know that this was your thing?
When I started writing, late in life, probably when I was about 40.
Oh, wow.
And I was a principal, but I'd write at night. I didn't sleep much back then. That was just my body. You know, mm-hmm. I just didn't sleep much. And people thought, well, you know, you need to be working instead of right. How can you do this? And both of them. Well, a lot of it, when most people are sitting there watching TV, relaxing, I'm pecking away on the computer, you know, when I was working. And now that when I retired, you know, I had more time to do it. And so that's what I would do more, a lot of days. And then just take a break and let my brain rest a little bit. And
do you have a pad by your bed? I know a lot of creative people have a notepad and a pen or pencil by their bed because they'll dream things and get up and write it down.
I tried that and I couldn't read my writing. Sorry, I gave that idea up. But I do make notes on my phone, on the notes section every once in a while. But a lot of it, you know, I just try to keep in my mind and then try to, because, you know, to get to this point, you've got to build up to it and have the characters in this point, and you're going to carry them forward. Some people said, I need to kill more people off to get you more emotionally, and I just can't. You know, some of them, you know, in this one, I do kill off of several. But you know, a lot of times in my stories, they want, you know, they want you to get more emotionally involved. And some of them I just can't kill off. You know, you fall in love with your characters.
Because you're emotionally involved.
Exactly. Yeah. That's right. Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
How many stories do you have going right now?
I looked this morning, because I'm fixing to enter a lot of them in the Austin Screenplay Contest. And probably...
Oh, yeah, is that the... I'm sorry to interrupt. The Austin... and I think Lamar is also putting some things in there. And it's about this time of year, right? Yeah.
Okay. Yes. And I think I have five or six features and probably that many shorts.
Are they all Western? Do you stick with one genre? Or you...
I'm all over the place.
Well, so... I want to talk a little bit about Windows Home, because that was the first time that I had met you, and
she wanted to make me cry too.
Yes, we sat down and we did a table reading,
right? Oh,
and wow, Windows Home was about a young man who had an overbearing father who was kind of hyper masculine.
Yeah, that's a different play,
right?
It wasn't Windows Home; it was the Piano Boy that we read.
Oh,
Windows Home is what we performed.
Okay, yeah, I thought.
Yeah. It must have really evolved, because that's definitely not what we put up.
Yeah, the Windows Home was the story of the Vietnam soldiers in the prison of war, and his wife, you know, they could communicate through the windows.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, they were 2,000 miles away, but they were looking through the windows at each other.
It was really
Drex's
cool.
Breakout role.
It really was. My first one. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if you were here, but... you know, we had both things going on at the same time on the stage, and it was excellent.
It was fantastic.
And that's the way it was written, too, to kind of play both sides of the stage. And one side would be lit, and then it would go dark, and the other side would light up as what was going on in Vietnam versus what was going on back at home. And you could apply that with really any war, but I grew up during Vietnam, so I wanted to do something that I was more familiar with. The one that you're talking about, I still need to finish it.
Well,
it's called Piano Boy.
Okay.
It was about a father, very overbearing, that wanted to be this stud football player, but he fell in love with playing the piano.
Yes.
And dad had all these problems. He was going to force him to play and sure didn't like him being a piano player.
Mm-hmm.
And so I take the play through a lot of those emotions, both sides of it. You know, him determined, the child determined, he's a genius piano player. And so I take it through his transition in life and the dad's transitioning in life and the trials and tribulations of that relationship going on, how, you know, mom and son cover for their dad's abusive behavior.
Yes.
And, you know, I tried to make sure it was all real, you know, real situations, either from studying real life or through my experiences as being a principal, having to handle those kind of things. And so I was able to put a lot of that knowledge into that play that I still need to finish. But
I wondered that. Do the characters live inside your memories? Where do you come up with the characters?
It's a lot of times when I'm driving, but most of the time when I'm just typing away and I say, I need a character to do this. I'm working on a period piece set in the late 30s, early 40s, and right now it's a short movie. And I happen to think of, I need another character in the courtroom scene and come up with one. Of course, we have to cast all those. The more characters you have, the more people you have to cast.
Lucky people.
Yeah. And I love doing period pieces because everybody likes to dress up.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. You know, and I like buying the costumes. I don't like buying them, but I like picking them out. You know?
Yeah, that's one of my favorite things about theater is costuming and, you know, set design. Just a
it's
good
like you
period.
Put the character on, right. Yes. Like right as you're putting his or her outfit on.
Absolutely. It's like one of my stars, I'm going to do a short story about a prisoner, and it's an old West one, and he was debating with another guy how the hat makes a difference. And the guy said, no, it doesn't make a difference. He said, let me show you. And he would change hats. And he said he was amazed at how just the different style of cowboy hat would portray the character. And the same thing with costumes. You take your costumes and you become either an evil villain or the good guy or whatever. And lighting does the same thing. The way you portray the lighting on a person, you make them more villainous or setting. And so I love all that. I've worked with some great directors in my acting time, and so I've tried to steal every idea or learn, you know, not steal, but learn.
So many details.
Everything stealing is such a hodgepodge. I had a friend that always said, I want to know what I know and what you know.
Yeah.
And, you know, I mean, that's why it's so hard to, you know, to figure out when people have plagiarized something or whatever, because you never know. I mean.
And I tell my actors, it's not Shakespeare, so it doesn't have to be exact, but the meaning has to be exact. Because what I write down may not feel comfortable for them. Mm-hmm. And so I allow them to change it to where their comfort is saying the line, but they still have to have the same meaning in that line. So that way you get a more cohesive acting from them, and it needs to be a very natural. Clint Eastwood, he stopped shooting he does about four shots, and he says you lose the realistic part of it. But I work for one director, make you shoot it 15, 16 times.
Yeah, some people think that, then you're not even acting anymore. Right. You're just habit.
To circle back around to Stanley Kubrick, that's something that I've heard about him, is that he will just go pound it to where the people are just emotionally, physically exhausted. Drained. Takes 10 years to make a movie, you know, or whatever. And
the scene where Jack Nicholson, you know, busts through the door and said, here's Johnny, shot over 100 times.
And it gets to where he was.
What are you looking for at that point? You know, is there really that much variation?
And a lot of it depends on the character. You know, you try to, if they're supposed to be somebody mad, you got to, you know, get that out of, work up to that. You know, some can do it naturally. Some you have to really work with them to get them mad so they come into that scene mad, happy, whatever the situation may be. And so, you know, part of the Showdown of Brazos, I'm a reluctant killer in part of it. And I kind of show that after I do the killing. And, you know, I'm very reluctant. I was forced to, but I didn't want to. And so,
after he kills somebody, he makes sure that the next one is like a camera angle from down low where he's like Superman, you know, just light shining on him. And see, it was all okay. It was all okay.
I tell you, those people get cut out of the movie.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I was on 1883, one of the spinoffs of Yellowstone.
And that was outstanding.
I had a few of the extras who tried to pose for the camera. They never got called back. They told them to sit down and never put them in. You have to look natural. If they tell you to walk down the street, you walk down the street. These would walk down the street about halfway, put the arm around on the wagon and turn around and kind of face the camera.
Like they're on Saturday Night Fever, you know.
Looking directly, you feel like they're looking at you.
Yeah. So you just never saw them again.
It's funny
you can't have that.
How you'll see that, or I've never actually looked at like dailies or footage or anything, but they said as soon as you look at that camera, it doesn't matter if there's 100 people next to you. That's exactly where everybody's attention is going to go.
It's called burning the scene or burning the camera.
Oh, gotcha. Burning the camera.
That person burning the camera. And we had a lot of that. Not meaning to. It's really hard. Yeah. The hardest thing is somebody has a camera and they tell you to walk across the room and act normal without looking at the camera. And it's very, very tough. You have to really get into the character.
I have a hard time doing that without a camera.
Try to trip, keep it falling. Yeah. But we had a lot of that. You know, we shoot it five or six times, and out of the, say, six times, three of them, you had to trim it down to where that person that looked the camera was out or just throw the whole scene out. And so.
Oh, that's frustrating, especially if you're going on film, you know,
I'd hate to do that in the old days, but technology's made it where everybody can make, you know, good movies. And, you know, and something you watch, if you'll watch on a show, if two people's having a conversation, you film it from this man's perspective, and then you film it from her perspective. And so it takes twice as long to get a conversation done. And you got to have your eye line the same, you know, because if you're looking at him and then you're behind me and the camera's looking at him and, you know, he's not looking straight at you. If you're looking up, it doesn't match.
It's probably hard to understand what he's saying until you see it and you're like, whoa. Yeah, it's very jarring.
I'm thinking about going back into, you know, the movies that I watch, and when you had mentioned people looking at the camera, I actually noticed that. I was watching, I don't remember what I was watching, but it happened to be a period piece, and it was filmed, I think, in Stephenville. It was probably one of the Yellowstones or
Bass Reeves.
Bass Reeves, mm-hmm. Yes.
I was supposed to be in that, but I was just too sick.
You know, Drex was in Bass Reeves.
Yeah, I was a bartender.
Awesome. Yeah, I was. They wanted me, but I was just too sick. I couldn't do it. So.
Well, I saw people walking through the streets, and I was paying attention to that because it was Stephenville or wherever it was, and I noticed a person looked at the camera. I actually noticed that. So it was a distraction that I didn't realize that I saw. But now that you're talking about that, it's like, oh, yeah, I remember actually thinking.
And once you're in a movie, you never watch another one the same.
And people have asked me, does that make him not as much fun to watch? I said, no. It almost makes him more fun, or it's just a different kind of fun.
It is.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm sure you do this when you're watching yourself on film. Of course, I was involved in all the editing. When I saw myself, I didn't see myself. I saw an actor.
Good.
And so, you know, when I'm looking at it, if that scene didn't work or whatever, you know, we cut it out and went to a different one. But
what's with this guy? Are you going to get him out of here or what? I don't want to see that guy
at the
next
camera,
time.
Burning the camera up, down.
We had some discussions with editors, you know.
Yeah. Isn't that you too, though? So is it just you, sitting on different sides of the
desk? Worst thing you have is static. That means no movement. That's the worst. Nobody's going to watch two people. And I saw that here a while back on a TV show. And they were just standing there talking to each other. And I showed my wife, I said, that's what you don't want. Because it gets boring real quick.
Or they'll be standing in weird ways that you would never stand when you're talking to somebody.
We tried to cut those out. It's like we had a few of those.
Reacher has a lot of those. Because that guy's, have you ever watched it?
No, I haven't seen Reacher.
He is having to launch so much exposition. And it's all just people standing and being in awkward configurations, talking about the case, you know, and it does step out. And now I guess everybody listening isn't going to be able to enjoy these movies.
Yeah, they will. They'll get involved in it. But I was on Alita: Battle Angel, and I was able to see the two stunt women rehearsing their fight. And that was amazing. Just sit there. Because when you see a fight, it's just like a dance. They rehearse every step. And I was in a fist fight one time on set. It will flat wear you out.
Well, Three Musketeers, they did sword fighting and stuff. That was put on here. And it was 100% choreographed.
Mm-hmm. You got to have a lot of faith in somebody you're swinging swords around with, man. You got to really, yeah.
For sure.
I have a story for you or two. Later.
Off the air.
Yeah,
we can turn microphones off and really get some stories.
Well, Bill, we really want to thank you for coming down, taking the time to sit with us and talk to us about your experience. It's really exciting and motivating to know, and somebody who started this later in life and has made such a success out of your efforts. So
thank you very much. And I'd like to say that I wrote Showdown on Brazos as like the old John Wayne Saturday afternoon movies, and that's exactly the way it came out. I wanted a nice clean movie, something the kids could go to, and so not a lot of blood, but you know, if you watch John Wayne or that era, you didn't see blood.
No,
we got a little
gory.
little bit, but you know, just for effect. But that's what I wrote, and it's 90 minutes long. And script started out as 52 pages, ended up 152.
Man, wow. It's a minute a page. Theoretically.
It's 90 minutes long, and I hope everybody comes out Saturday at 7:30 and Sunday at 2:30.
Thank you, Bill.
Well, I want to say before you go, thanks again for having a hand in changing my life being part of my happiness, man.
Well, great. That movie that you're in has won awards all over the United States.
America,
a world. Yeah, all over the world. Last one we got was in Paris.
That's awesome.
Paris.
Well, I was talking about Windows Home and bringing me to here and having that experience. It completely changed my
life.
Thank you for that.
My grandson actually won for another short we did in Paris, Best Actor. against adults.
Oh, that's great.
And then he won Best Young Actor in Germany on The Showdown of the Brazos.
Did you tell him yet?
Won't
be able to get his head through the doorway now.
Thanks, Bill.
You're very welcome. Thank y'all.
I'm not sure. I think I've read that somewhere, but I'm not an audio guy as much. I always get someone else to do that for me.
What kind of guy are you, Josh?
Not an audio one.
We are here with Joshua Wilburn, my cousin, and he happens to also be a filmmaker and do a lot of interesting things. But those, as we were talking before, those are his side gigs to being my cousin.
Well, yes. Welcome, Josh. I want to first and foremost congratulate you on Drex and the family relation there. It's important. Talk to us about something that's secondary. How did you come to the lyric?
I got to know the lyric when I was in high school in probably 2012, 2013. I don't remember when the doors opened here. But I was in high school around that time, and knew Eric Evans just through family and those sorts of things, and ended up coming around for MASH, which I believe was like the first 10 shows.
Yeah, it was a huge hit. Everyone still talks about MASH and how much fun that show was. Mm-hmm. The cast loved it. The people loved it.
And I think I actually auditioned for MASH.
Now
that I'm thinking back about it, I'm pretty sure I auditioned for MASH, and then I got so busy, as I always am, and ended up not being able to do it. But I did come and do a promo video where we had the cast go through town, do the chicken dance, and then they had the Jeep parked out front.
Oh, yes, the Jeep.
Was MASH a musical? Did you have a piece?
Remember.
I don't remember.
Did you have a song?
No, definitely not.
I was going to ask if you rapped. That would have been cool.
Yeah.
Are you Hamilton a rap artist?
Yeah. / MASH. MASH up.
Mashelton.
Mashelton. Hey, guys, we should not record this, and we should write it down and get a patent on
it. Write that down.
Yeah, this is gold, so anybody, it's already out there in the airwaves, don't take it.
Yeah. the founding fathers in Korea. Behind enemy lines, or friendly lines. Wait, enemy lines.
At a hospital. That.
I can remember how that,
Yep, we got it.
Wow, you guys are
but
old.
Yeah, that was. I've heard that was one of the only times our grandfather cried was at the finale of the TV show MASH. It was a big deal. Yeah.
I remember hating MASH when I was like six.
It was a letdown.
It was
like
a,
all of a sudden it's a after you've been watching like other cool stuff.
Yeah.
Now it's like time for everybody to calm down and watch MASH, you know.
Well, yeah, and I thought it was so, exactly. I thought it was so boring. It was right up there with the news. I didn't want any part of it. And then I got older and went back and watched it. It was, you know, whatever was on because we didn't have a billion options like we do now.
Yeah. I think you also have to be at least 40 years old to appreciate the talents of Alan Alda, honestly.
Oh, phenomenal.
I wish I could do an impersonation.
No, it's funny. There's a lot of rooms I'm in where I'm definitely the youngest person. I'm like, what are
you
talking
smile
about?
And nod.
I was a bit surprised at how young you appear to be. I mean, some people just look young, but I was like, oh, in my head, I guess I thought that you were like Drex's age.
Yeah,
much older.
No, yeah, that is kind of, his mom ended up having children later. So yeah, it's always been this kind of, I'm sure with them, it's like, is he my uncle or my cousin or whatever?
Yeah.
Or my dad? No one said that.
No, but when we were walking in here today, Elisa had on her professional Elisa mode with Josh. And I was like, this is weird. I don't know.
I'm not just going to jump right into the swear words. We have a level of professionalism.
Jump right in. Let's go.
Did I just swear?
No, you didn't. Oh. No.
I thought you were.
No, I'm saying if I had my professional hat on, then I guess I just wasn't, you know, talking like I There's might talk.
Yeah, I want to see your professional hat.
It's my headband
today. It's not
today.
The headband you're wearing? Is there a difference?
Maybe that's what it is. Anyway. Yeah, we digress. Let's get back to something a little more interesting like...
MASH.
Well, yeah. MASH too. But no, Josh, talk to us about your ties to Showdown on the Brazos, because that's kind of what our main topic is, other than you.
Yeah. Bill Foster, he had met my mother through some work in education that he was doing. And he ended up talking to my mom about, I'm trying to make this short film. At the time, Showdown was a short film. It wasn't a feature length movie. He wanted to shoot something on an iPhone and do that. And then
Bill didn't even mention that, but he did say you never finish, you just stop, I guess, or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
So it just kept growing,
or make it bigger. Yeah.
There were parts of the movie that we wrote later on once we realized like we could do this as a bigger thing. So at first it was kind of like a short film that Bill wanted to do and just shoot on his iPhone, just to give spotlight to a lot of his friends that were doing background extra work and and wanting to get, you know, more of like a leading role, speaking role in a movie. And
like a promo.
Yeah, exactly. And then ended up meeting Bill through my mother, and then he asked me to come out and help do assistant directing at first, and then I became the director of photography. We brought in my professional cameras and were able to shoot it and build it to more than just an iPhone movie. And I think that's what attracted Bill to having me, is that I could bring, you know, some of those.
Bring
Josh
the big
back
guns.
Then, you know, he was still a teenager, right?
I was 20 years old,
young adult.
Well, when he was always the kid with the riding a skateboard with a camera.
Yeah.
You know,
oh,
he was
for
always
sure.
Like, yeah, yeah. So that, and then that, he was always into the camera, and that always kind of grew into.
Oh yeah, I picked up a camera at 15 that your mom actually helped me get, and she was a huge supporter early on, and I don't think I put it down for like 3 years at minimum. I would go buy a lens and go shoot birds as photos for like a week.
Do you ever look back at those?
Oh yeah.
What do you see, your growth, or do you see like, man, I had talent and no wonder I'm where I am today?
That's kind of how I feel. I mean, I look at some of those things and I'm like, man, I wouldn't have done that today, but it's like so just natural and there. You know?
It's funny though, because you're not actually like behind the camera, but you're still.
No.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm in a lot of meetings now where I talk about things pretty much.
You're the SME, the subject matter expert.
Yeah. Yeah. You learn, and really you learn by watching. And it's like a big part of filmmaking is just having taste of like things. And it's like knowing the movies and knowing what to call back to. And how that can work in your project and what element of that fits yours. So that's definitely what I'm good at these days.
There's so much nuance to everything, but film, especially as I've gotten into the theater and met and talked to more people, we had talked about what lighting does to the mood and how you don't even realize you're being taken into an emotional space and then you're just there. But all the things that it takes to make that happen.
Yeah. All the planning.
For sure. Yeah. For sure. And Showdown, you know, there's one moment where this is a perfect example. It's Bill's character is going to the gravesite of his family. Spoiler, it happens in like the first 20 minutes though, but spoiler.
His family died, everyone.
Yeah. It was bad. Nate Jones and his gang. Oh my gosh. He's going to the gravesite, and essentially we shot it. I made the creative choice with Bill to shoot it like Lord of the Rings. If you ever watch the scenes with the elves, it's all blown out, and and what I wanted to do there was just try and connect the audience to, this is almost a spiritual moment for his character. There's emotion there, and it's raw and it's on the surface. And Bill brought it with the acting, so it just sold it even more. I mean, it's always a hat on a hat. You're trying to plus things, but you also got to make sure it's not a hat on a hat, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Like you're always trying to add on top of each other, but two hats look stupid.
Do you know the term hat on a hat? I don't want to mansplain for
anybody. No, please,
mansplain. Just where you like where you add too much, but sometimes, like you're saying, you do add too much, but you don't want to make it look like a hat on a hat.
Yeah.
Like you do want a hat on a hat, but you don't want it to be obvious.
So it'd be like if I had my all business hat on when, when Josh walks in, I have my all business hat or headband on, and then I put on my fun hat on top of that, but I don't want him to know that I have both hats on.
Yeah, exactly. You don't want him to see the one underneath.
Okay.
Yeah. I think like a, like Jonah Hill's character in Wolf of Wall Street. He's wearing a suit and he's got a veneer. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, he's just a complete goofball. You think he's someone you take serious, but he's just a nutty person.
Layers.
Yeah. Layers. That's all it's about.
So do you call back to, do you just watch movies all the time?
No, not really. Yeah. I watch a lot of reality TV these days. Movies bore me because it's like you do it for a living and you live that 10, 12 hours a day. So you go home and you're like, okay, let me watch Love is Blind.
Okay, I was wondering what your guilty pleasure. Well, see, maybe it's not even a guilty pleasure.
That there's so much now. It's not like before where like you, if you rented a movie on a VHS, you were prepared to like it in some way because there was nothing else.
And you had just put money in real time.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So you're going to like it. But now there's so much that your taste is like, okay. Yeah. You know, or if I'm not getting a payoff within 5 minutes, I'm going to put it back on Love is Blind.
Well, exactly. I hope that folks don't feel that way about this podcast. It'll pay probably. Off, I promise.
They're probably vacuuming, not even listening right now. Just fulfilling their duties.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, whatever, as long as you're listening.
Right.
We hope that carpet gets cleaned.
Yeah, as long as that is a subscribe button.
Josh, you were on like film sets, mm-hmm. you know, so you did Showdown and you were doing commercials, I remember.
While I was working on Showdown, I was actually working HGTV shows. So in the week I'd go spend 3 days a week, going to random houses around Fort Worth and filming reality TV.
Who did you meet? Who were the hosts? Anybody people would know?
I worked a little bit with Chip and Joanna Gaines. Mm-hmm. Not at that time when I was working with Bill, but, Grace Mitchell from One of a Kind, and she has like an at-home collection now. I don't believe she made it quite as big as Chip and Joe, but that was who I worked with, and that was a really.
What did you
nice
do?
Production assistant, just how you start in the industry. And I at the same time I was doing director of photography,
running
so
a lot of errands and
running errands, going delivering packages, making sure hard drives make it to the editors in L.A. You know, those kind of things.
Yeah. It's like being a busboy at like this restaurant and then you go to this other one, you're the head bartender.
Yeah. Yeah. You just move around and
it's
move
just
hats
a lot
all day.
Of different hats.
Yeah, you're carrying gear for the camera guys, relieving their backs.
And I guess I'm trying to figure out like how did that get you to Chosen? I don't even think we've ever talked about that.
Yeah, so Drex mentioned that you are a part of Chosen. Can you talk about, is that what you're working on now?
A junior producer type thing or?
Yeah, somewhat. I mean, coordinating, which is on the track for producing, but pretty much I started as the COVID guy whenever there was COVID rules. I was doing all the COVID tests for the Chosen.
Wow.
And we did a feeding of the 5,000, did 10,000 COVID tests in 2 days. And so logistics guy really is what
did
I
did you get COVID
guys.
During that time?
Once.
You don't
and it
have
was
to
for my roommate.
That.
It wasn't even from the show at all. It was during a hiatus period in between.
It's always the person you least suspect, right?
Yeah. I come home one day after being in Utah for like 2 months. I'm on planes and all this stuff. And then I get to my house. You know, we're hanging out, play video games for like 30 minutes and then go to sleep. And then I wake up the next morning and he's like, hey bro, do you have a COVID test? And I was like, yeah, I got like 800 with me right now.
You and better go get tested too.
Yeah. I tested him and of course positive. And then the next morning I'm like supposed to go back to work and I take my test.
He wrote it
at like 4 a.m. before I drive in. And yeah. And it was positive too. It was nice to get that 5 days off, though.
Well, sure. Yeah, yeah. So you got through the COVID incident, and then you went from what position to what?
Yeah, once the COVID policies went away, that was May of last year, May of 23. Once those went away, I ended up moving into the production office, working under the producers at Out of Order Studios, And a large part of my job was doing tours for all the donors that did the crowdfunding. So I was kind of meeting and greeting, running the logistics for that.
And where is this taking place?
In Midlothian, Texas, and in Goshen, Utah. So spent six weeks out in Utah this last summer as well.
Beautiful.
So yeah, it was great.
Beautiful. Okay, so you are touring folks around the set of Chosen. What is that? Is that indoor? What is the set of Chosen?
So the one in Midlothian is a rebuild of like Capernaum, which is the town where Jesus would have started his ministry in the show and in real life. There's a lot of cool historical stuff and also just cool film stuff there.
So they've done their homework?
Yes. Yes, very much so. We have biblical scholars and all those kind of things involved. And then we have some sound stages, which is where you would build like an indoor set and air conditioning.
Nice.
With soundproofing and really easy place to film.
Just like back in those days with the soundproofing.
Uh-huh. And then
the
we go
AC.
To...
Yeah, it wasn't AC. A palm leaf.
Yeah, yeah. It's,
and then we go to Utah to film like Jerusalem and like the big city. And as well as there's just mountains and things like that out there that you could film a lot of travel sequences and those kind of things.
Have you ever heard of like Jerusalem syndrome where people go to...
Are you making this up?
No, this is the thing. Yeah. It happens in Paris too. People go on vacation and maybe they're people who've always wanted to see Jerusalem because, you know, they're really into the Bible, or the stories from the Bible. So they get there and there's like, is it made out of clay? It's like clay,
Adobe.
People selling rugs in a bazaar or something. And they start to, and this is normally people who already have issues with mental health. It's easy for them to like get in this delusion of like, oh man, I'm maybe not Jesus, but I'm just an...
It feels like that on set sometimes. That,
yeah. You just...
Well, that's what
like,
I was going to say.
Wow,
they just go...
Jerusalem.
They're going into actor mode in real life all the time.
But it's kind of...
And they're not getting paid.
It's almost like I went to New York City and I had like... I think it was Fifth Avenue or Wall Street or something. I had a big hot dog from like a vendor. And like I was ready to start like shouting at people and... saying I'm walking
hey, wise
in.
Guy get out of the way you filthy animal
yeah I said you know
so
it was dirtier
oh well you know
hey, I'm working no, on yeah, becoming a better
watch,
man
watch those hats and when you put them on so Josh what's next
right now I'm working for the Chosen's campus and as a campus coordinator in Midlothian. And
so when you say campus, I think of what the in my sector, campus is just a big building with like nine stories.
And parts his hair.
Yeah. I ride around on golf carts all day and terrorize gophers. Really what it is it's about five buildings on one side and you got, 5,000 square foot wardrobe building, construction building, cafeteria that can see like 250 people and then like a prop shop. So you
it's
got
like
all
a tiny town.
Yeah, pretty much. And we built it kind of in the middle of nowhere. And so my job is, just kind of keeping the place afloat. I must say I do not represent the Chosen in any way, shape or form, but
Ricky Bobby Inc.
Exactly. So yeah, I just kind of keep things moving on that campus, and right now we're about a couple days out.
We're walking.
But we're a couple days out from getting another 30,000 square foot soundstage, where we'll be shooting a lot of season five and ramping up for season five right now.
So this crowdfunding thing is really paying off for y'all.
It's doing a thing. Yeah. That's for sure.
So. What's next? You have big projects this summer. Are you doing...
Yeah, you had mentioned a filmmaker
school. The Chosen has partnered with Salvation Army, specifically Camp Hoblitzell, which is in Midlothian. That's actually where our campus is. And we've partnered with them for this July. I believe it will be the third or fourth year for the camp where we're... It's called Camp Hoblitzell Film Academy, not Academy. Mm-hmm. And basically, we'll be teaching with a lot of industry professionals that work on the show. We got some amazing people that have worked on movies we've all grown up with and love, as well as some social media people that work with like Mr. Beast and teaching kids on how to make media. And it's really important right now that we get more filmmakers in Texas.
Wait, I'm having a MASH moment. What's Mr. Beast? I'm just kidding, but I really should know. I just learned about Mr. Beast like two
weeks
ago.
Well, he just signed an Amazon deal, and he's about to get a big reality TV show.
Wasn't he, didn't he critique people on YouTube, Mr. Beast? Didn't he do like critiques? Or I know it through my kids, but my son would be able to tell me.
He does like what feels like reality competition shows, but they're like different ones. He did like a remake of Squid Games with real people. They weren't actually killing people, but he gave away like $1 million to the winner. Like, he's always doing things like that where he's giving to the community. He opened, like, I remember like one thing he did was like open like a free bank where they gave away $1 million in a day to just anyone that showed up.
I remember hearing him say more money these days. Like, how do all these
people have so much money? He makes a lot of money, but he puts a lot of that money into the show to keep it going.
Yeah. He lives in like the same house from where he started.
That's cool to me.
He's like that kind of guy.
Yeah.
So
the money is his, his capital to move around, I guess, and to use it for these.
He reinvests everything back into the next video and just stays afloat somehow through it all.
Meanwhile, he must love it.
Giving away Teslas.
Most people our age, Elisa, had never even seen his face. But once you've seen it, like, it's perfect for a YouTube thumbnail. He's got a wild face, but like, he looks normal. He's got.
So he's part of this. You've got...
He's not part of this, but someone that's like helped mentor him and is helping to teach like kind of for like a new media, like social media type video.
They want to get like kids wanting to be filmmakers and wanting to get into it because,
And this year we're extending up to age 22. So it'll be, you know, kind of like high school, college. I believe like youngest you can be is like 12, 13 maybe.
But and do you stay on campus? So there's
it's like a week on campus, and we actually make a video project with all the kids, and that's kind of the goal of the whole thing, and learn throughout it, and even
hands-on, which is so much better than sitting in a classroom listening to someone drone on or reading a textbook.
But that's going to put you, I mean, the whole idea is not to get these people to study it and hopefully get like. They want to teach these kids or young adults to get them making all the films that we're about to blow up. And
we really need it right now, mainly because the tax incentives for film in Texas have increased by about $160 million.
And I'm sure if they don't get a lot of people using that, then it's going to go away, right?
Yeah. Because, I mean, they give out those tax incentives because, you know, the economic impact of having a film come in, it's hotel rooms for months. It's
restaurants,
bars. It's people coming in from LA and staying here for 3 months to 6 months to make a TV show. Mm-hmm. So you get tons of travel and just different things. So it really boosts the economy to have a film come in. It'd be about $1 billion in boost if all those tax incentives are used up.
I know these things are a sore subject with some people, like the wind turbines, but I remember when they started putting a whole bunch in, it was, when I moved here like 10 years ago, there were a ton of guys in town, you know, on our economy spending money. It was great. And that's the same kind of thing we're looking at here, you know.
And personally, I think Brownwood's one of the best places to make films. You can drive about 30 minutes in any direction and get whatever kind of movie you want.
The weather's always pretty good. Weather's always good. Plenty of wide open, beautiful space, you know.
Yeah.
So I have a question about what happens after. So you have this big campus, and then everything's done.
Yeah.
What do you tear it down? Do people sell it? Do they repurpose it? What?
It won't be torn down. They'll keep it. Not quite sure what for yet. That's for my leadership to decide.
But generally, those are repurposed in your experience,
Yeah. Like, if you go in Dallas, there's like Las Colinas sound stages still there. That's where they shot RoboCop like 30 years ago. So there's places like that in Texas for sure that have history. RoboCop, and there's a lot of crew members. There's a lot of crew members in Texas that you can learn from that worked on Walker, Texas Ranger, Dallas. Barney was made in Dallas, by the way. So there's like all these things.
So that's interesting that you mentioned that, because several years ago, maybe 15, I went to the Granbury Theater and I watched Patsy Cline. Mm-hmm. It's made for film. And the woman who played Patsy Cline
was Patsy Cline.
Nope. Even better.
Yeah.
the voice for Barney.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Or wait, no, not Barney, the girl, the friend. If you've ever watched it with kids, it's the little yellow friend, best friend of Barney. And I thought, how did someone attached to Barney get in Granberry? But now it makes sense.
Yeah. I mean, some of the wardrobe designers that I've worked with in the past help make Barney's outfit. And so those people are still around and they're still here. And so there's great opportunities for young people. If you get in the industry now, you're going to learn from some legends.
Well, I can tell you, we're glad that you're around and here. And thank you, Joey, for taking the time to sit down with
Joey's
us.
Joey's my this dad. Is,
that's Elise.
I'm Josh.
Well, there we go. Shout out to Joey. Thank you, Josh Wilburn. Are you Joshua? Or
Josh,
yeah. Yeah. Thanks, Josh, for coming out. Oh, you call him Squash?
Yeah, officially Squash. Okay, on his driver's license.
Thank you, Squash. We appreciate you being here, and good luck. Well, Drex, those were great interviews.
Yeah, they absolutely were.
And I think the most important thing that I learned was that your cousin Josh's main claim to fame is actually being your cousin.
So I mean, he's lucky, and that's got him far. And hopefully I'll be able to ride his coattails on into the future. I think he sounds like he's got it figured out, huh?
Oh, yeah, they both do. Really, really excited to have those two on, so we want to thank them again. We also want to thank our sponsors for the podcast, Sit, Stay, Play, At Home Pet Watching. We've got our show sponsor for All Shook Up, which is Texas Bank. So we want to thank them. Hopefully we'll see you all at the shows, all the great concerts that we have, all the great performances. And if you need more details, you can find us on our social medias, on Facebook, on
Instagram
YouTube. And YouTube.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Texas Bank, for letting us park in your parking lot. I always know I can depend on y'all for that.
At the least.
At the least, yes.
Thanks, y'all. Bye-bye.
Yeehaw!